Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi everyone, Amy here. Aside from our usual filthy language, please be aware that our discussion and the documentary itself touches on mental health challenges, addiction, and diet culture and disordered eating. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Little Miss Recap, the podcast where the good news keeps on coming and the good feelings and the feel-good stories. And today we're doing Where is Wendy Williams? And for this documentary, I had to call on my pop culture millennial consultant, Leslie DJ. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Amy. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. It is so good to see you.
I know. I miss talking to you. It's been a long time.
Everyone what you've been up to, because you've been doing some fancy smarty pants stuff.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I have a podcast called Sinister Girls. I haven't been as active with it because I'm finishing up my dissertation. And
yeah, you're getting your doctorate.
I know, right? In psychology, go figure. And just getting the IRB approval, which is the Internal Review Board of the college, to approve like the data collection. It has been so taxing and going back and forth. And then now it's like recruiting. And then I had to hire a recruitment company because I couldn't find participants. And then that had to get approval. It's been a nightmare. So I have no time to like rock and roll, and it sucks. But I'm almost done.
You have no time to watch trash TV.
I mean, I always make time for that. It's part of the degree, I think. Psychology. Come on.
All right. So I called you in today because we want to talk about the new documentary that's on Lifetime called Where is Wendy Williams? And I wanted to cover this because I hear a lot of people talking about it, and it's kind of that intersectionality of mental health and reality TV, right? Yeah. Like where do we draw that line? What are the ethical concerns around that? But also, I really didn't have a lot of idea of who Wendy Williams was.
And that's fair, because she was mostly known. I grew up with Wendy Williams and the fact that I'm from New York, and she was a New York radio host, and everybody knows her through the radio. And then when she got on TV, more people got exposed to her. And I remember being like, they're going to give Wendy Williams a TV show. I thought it was so shocking because she was always getting kind of into trouble, pushing the boundaries. She's always been compared to Stern in the sense of being shock value, or the queen of all media, which she dubbed herself.
Right. When they were calling her the queen of all media, I was like,
Well, Howard and her have talked about this, and he actually made fun of her, like, openly on his show. Like, he's had her on the show like many years ago. They had since falling out. I don't know about now in terms of where they are, but I remember when she got inducted, because at some point in the documentary they mentioned, you're inducted into Radio Hall of Fame or whatever. Howard Stern was going to be the first inductee of that, and he declined it because he said that was stupid, that that's some guy's basement. So he poo-poos that whole thing. So he makes fun
Just like he poo-pooed podcasts.
Yeah.
Because he's on the cutting edge of all technology, I guess.
But yeah.
And I like Howard Stern, but like, dude, you sound like you're 107 when he's like going on.
Yeah. There's some times where I'm just like, dude, you're missing it. Yeah, but then he loves Housewives and he has great takes on that. So I can't fault him.
I like Howard Stern. So I used to listen to Howard Stern when I went to State College, when I went to Penn State, because we got him there. We didn't get him in Scranton where I was growing up. So that was what, 95, 96, 97? I thought he was a misogynistic scumbag. I was
I didn't like him then.
Right. I like him now. Mm-hmm. I feel like he has really become, I have a term on my show that I call broth. Okay. This is not broth. I feel like he's had actual growth.
He's been in a lot of therapy. Like he does therapy like three times a week for years. Yes.
So I still think there are problems there and he has a lot in his past to atone for.
Yep.
But I think that I agree with a lot more that he says now. And his interviews like during COVID were amazing, or right before COVID. He was really in his heyday around 2017, 2018 when he had his 60th birthday party. And he was interviewing all these great musicians, but he interviewed Dan Rather and they talked about the Vietnam War for like 2 hours. I was there. Oh my God, they're talking about JFK. I'm like, I could listen to this all fucking day because that's like my little weird love.
Yeah. He loves that. As a, you know, veteran of the Vietnam War, he was not. He just says he was.
Stolen valor. So Wendy Williams was kind of around the same time, would you say? Or was she a little later?
A little later. Like, I remember Wendy Williams more like in the early aughts, kind of.
Okay, because when she had her talk show, I feel like that had come around. So I used to watch like talk show TV when it was Oprah. And I used to watch Phil Donahue growing up, Sally Jesse, you know, Maury, those guys. She was much later, right?
Yes. This was like the early aughts that I'm remembering. Okay.
Because after 2006, when I had my twins, I don't remember 7 to 10 years. So if it happened between 2006 and like 2010, I was not sleeping more than 2 hours.
Because she got her show, I think, like around 2010, something like that. But she was on the radio, like in the early aughts. She was really making waves then.
Okay. All right. So I didn't really know who she – like, I knew who she was, but I didn't know kind of how iconic she was and, like, what she was. So what would you say is her – I don't know how to describe this. Like, if I asked you to describe the Wendy Williams show – how would you describe it? Like, is it close to like a Maury Povich type? Is it close to like Oprah type? Is it close to somewhere in between? Like, is she scandalous? Like, is she, what does she do?
Here's the thing. She was very unique in the sense that what she wanted to do was similar to what she did in her radio, which was kind of have like these kind of talks about celebrities and kind of like all the stuff you see on TMZ or the gossip blogs and talk about them as hot topics. So she would do a little bit of the tabloid thing, and then she'll have like interviews as well, and then she'd do the regular daytime segments. But her thing was, why people loved her was that she was so relatable, because she did have a lot of afflictions and she would talk about it. Like when she was going through her divorce, she talked about it because it was everywhere. There were so many scandals. And like when her husband at the time was cheating on her and had a mistress, you know, everybody was talking about that. But she then finally she addressed it. And so people just started to like her because of that. That softened her up, because she would often say outrageous things about celebrities to their face and they would get mad at her.
Yeah. So who did she have some good feuds with people? Like, who are her feuds? Do you remember?
Well, we do see it in the documentary Black China. Like, they ended up getting along.
Yes. That was a really moving scene.
That moment, did you clock that? The moment when she's going like, yeah, and she's like nodding ahead, and then that third nod, it's like it clicked with Black China that she was not all there. It's like it finally clicked, because then it was different, like, okay, and then she cried.
Yeah.
It was like she got it.
Yeah, it was crazy. So I have some notes, but I kind of think, you know, the way that we have to approach it is just kind of top level, you know, bird's eye view, because there's 4 episodes, right?
4 episodes. And they're long. They felt like an eternity because there was so much going on.
So the documentary, so I read an interview in Vanity Fair with the producers. She's a producer. Her son is a producer. I think somebody else is a producer in her family too. Maybe her sister. So she had hired this crew, or they had been in talks with her, because they thought she was going to have a podcast and a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, like, a lot of people felt this was gross because who is this documentary team? But she actually hired them.
Yeah.
And one of the interviews, or one of the questions that they asked the producers was, you know, did you feel that you had overstayed your welcome, more or less, right? That this was borderline exploitative of what's going on. And the producer, the director, whomever it was, said, actually, I think she felt better when we were there. And it almost became a situation where we were afraid what would have happened when we left. And I thought that was really interesting, because that flips the dynamic on its head that I had thought was going on here.
But then you kind of see that, because there are points where she's like yelling at people. And then, like, even her manager is kind of saying, like, oh, she doesn't like people here. She's like, no, but you guys are okay. You guys are fine. Yeah. I'll give you 1,000 hours.
Yep.
Because she wants to be famous.
So we see her in the beginning before she goes to rehab, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, she's real obsessed with her lymphedema in her feet.
Yeah.
And which is a serious condition, a real illness. I know people who have it. It's intense. So she's very, you know, talking a lot about her feet, talking about her sister, Wanda.
Yeah, Wanda.
And how Wanda doesn't like her relationship with alcohol. And, you know, she doesn't know if she's going to ever talk to Wanda again. She seems to be a strange, like, she's, and then we get the black screen of death. And it's like Wendy went away after this, and then she came back. So that's kind of how episode one opens, correct?
Yeah. And what was interesting about that was that I was watching it and I paused it, and it was minute 2:19.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Wendy first breaks down crying after she flips off the cameraman for not wanting to see her boobs. Because she was talking about how now that she's free from the Wendy Williams show, she's free to do whatever. She could show her boobs. You want to see? And they're like, no, that's okay. And then she flips them off.
Yeah.
And then she starts crying. And then Will is hugging her. I had an icky feeling about her manager from day one. From the
I did too. Yep.
Did not like
him. So this takes place. Most of the documentary takes place. She's lost the show.
Mm-hmm.
She's lost her mother.
Yeah.
She's been divorced very publicly and humiliated by her husband literally coming home and being like, my mistress had a baby.
Yep.
She has lymphedema in her feet, which is super painful.
Yeah.
And she's an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a lot.
It is a lot.
And I was even thinking, as they were going through those things, I'm like, that's a lot for anybody to handle. Yeah. And then we go into COVID. You know, we see COVID. So COVID really did a number on her, because she didn't have her show. So we meet her now. She's kind of lost everything, and she thinks she's going to mount this comeback with a podcast.
Yeah.
And so her manager's Will, he was a jeweler?
A jeweler.
That was weird, right?
Like, who celebrity jeweler. I don't know.
Right. And so
they met at a club, apparently.
Yeah. I just have questions here. Like, who is this guy? Do we trust him? Throughout the entire documentary, guys, there's this constant narrative of Wendy needs to be kept away from alcohol. She's struggling with her sobriety. You know, we now know, like, it's come out in hindsight that she has alcohol-induced dementia. We know this now. And but yet, somehow, Leslie, there's always alcohol in the house.
There's always someone willing to enable her.
And who is giving her the alcohol? And I wrote, it's got to be Will.
Yeah.
How is she getting that? And I think on camera, he's saying, no, 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 no.
Maybe he gives in because it was just relentless how she would get that. He'd just be like, oh, fine, or whatever. Or maybe it was the publicist. Maybe it was somebody else that we didn't really see, because we don't know how many people are in and out of her house.
No, we have no idea.
And I know exactly where that building is. I know that exactly where that is. I was like, oh, my God, I know this building exactly. It's the building where the Friends store is, the Friends Experience. That's that building.
Oh, okay. That's
she doesn't live there anymore.
Right, she sold it.
She doesn't live there, so.
So she also does this thing where she says 6 years old from Asbury Park a lot, which I feel like this is something that I remember when my grandmother had dementia. Like, this is something that they do where they hang on to, like, a core memory.
Yeah.
And that becomes, like, a touchstone. And I think that's what was going on with her, because she kept saying it throughout the whole documentary all the time. 6 years old from Asbury Park, 6 years, like it was, yeah. It was repetitive. And I wondered if that was going on.
And also I was thinking about her obsession with New York. And I've known people from Jersey, they've always wanted to be more of a New Yorker. So as soon as they mm-hmm. could get out of Jersey, they go to New York. And I think that's mm-hmm. part of her story too. Where it's yeah. like, oh, 6 years old, Asbury Park. Like, she's proud that she has a street named after her, but she's a New Yorker in her mind and her soul. Yeah. Like, that's where she's lived. So
yep.
she always wants to come back to New York.
How about that scene where Will takes her to Asbury Park?
That was intense. Like, when the fans saw her, and it was just so crazy, her going to the house, her childhood home.
So it was really interesting when she went to Asbury Park. And I want to talk about it from kind of like a racial aspect, if we can, because mm-hmm. we get to Asbury Park and there's this like white businesswoman who had the street named or was yep. on the council to have Wendy Williams Way, right? She seems to have no idea who Wendy is, a la Amy Archer. Okay, I'm not throwing shade at her. She seems to have no idea who Wendy is, but yet is like, let me get a picture with you. Let me get a picture with you. Then you see these young Black girls come out, and yeah. they love her. And they're like, we look up to you. You're amazing. And then one woman is even saying to her, like, we know who you are. Like, yeah. we know who. And it was so moving to me. And I was thinking, like, how amazing for those young girls to have that role model of somebody who made it. You know what I mean? And you just see that she is such an advocate of Black women and Black girls. And I think they respond to her.
Yeah.
In that, like, even when she talks about, like, the wig, right? She's like, I'm yeah. going to take my wig off. I'm going to encourage other women to take their wigs off. Like, she's such a good role model for Black women. I will say that. And they seem to really love her and connect with her in that way that we see the people we yeah. see in the movie,
because she was unapologetically herself, and she yeah. could stand toe to toe with a man and like read him to filth, basically. She yep. has like the power of a drag queen. Like, she could read you to filth, and yep. I love that about her.
I love it too. And it's just like I think everybody, regardless of race or gender, loves a rags to riches story, right? Like, yeah. this is a kid from Asbury Park, which is not a very affluent area.
Nope.
And they made it. She made it. And it was really, it was very heartwarming to see those young girls just being like, we love you. We love you. I loved it so much.
Yeah. So just now, seeing the part of like the little house that she was in, and then you
yes.
cut back to her massive apartment in yes. Gramercy, you're like, holy like that's a big change.
Well, that's like, I live in Scranton, and Joe Biden grew up with my grandfather. Like, he lived here till he was 10 years old, and they lived in the Greenridge section of Scranton. And it's like just this normal average looking house. Yeah. And my grandfather kind of ran with two other boys. You know, they would play baseball and stuff in the streets. And one of them was Joe Biden, and the other one was Bob Casey's father, the governor Casey. So, like, I'm like, what happened to my grandfather?
Why did he join in?
What did he think? Oh, so, it's so interesting, yeah. though. But like, that's a kid who, whether or not you agree with Joe Biden's politics, like, he became president.
Yeah, he was just good. A kid, a regular right. kid, like everybody pretty else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what was something that, when I first heard this, that she said this in the beginning of the doc, it made me chuckle. And then after that, it made me sad. When she was like, I love Tito Puente. Okay, Tito Puente was a percussionist from Cuba, mm-hmm. not vodka. She meant Tito vodka.
Oh, she meant Tito's.
And Tito Puente was like a famous percussionist. So I laughed. I was like, oh my God, I know what she means, but that's now.
So we see that her son, Kevin, had her in Florida, and she seemed to be doing a lot better. But then the bank grows suspicious of the spending that happens mm-hmm. while she's there. And she spends like $100,000, but it's him spending it.
Yeah.
And so then we hear from, I forget who told us this, but somebody told us, like, well, this is average for Kevin. Like, his Uber Eats bill is $100,000 a month. And I'm like, dude, what are you Uber eating?
You're eating diamonds?
Like, buy some Velveeta macaroni and cheese and cook that shit. What are you
doing? He's eating Fabergé eggs. What is happening?
What is he doing? And his rent is $80,000 a month.
Where is he living? In a mansion in the sky?
Well, he's in Miami, and I guess Miami.
Well, Miami is expensive, but damn, $80,000 for a child. That is a child. I'm sorry. He's in his early 20s. He's a fucking child.
So there is this guardian appointed to oversee Wendy Williams' finances and basically her life choices. This guardian, the name has been released. I'm not saying it here because this guardian does not want to be known. So if you want to look it up, go ahead and Google. This guardian is independent of the family. They are with a law firm. Yeah. So like they have taken this, this kind of gets to the Gen Xer in me. I don't like this at all. They have taken all of her autonomy away. Like she has no control over her own life. But they claim that they did this because somebody in the family is getting real creative with the finances.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any idea what's going on there?
You know, that was the thing, because then I was thinking like, so who is the bad guy here?
Right.
Is it these people, the publicist, the manager, or is it the family? Because the family, even though they're showing that they show her best interest, like I love her niece.
I thought she was great. Love her. Yes.
She was so smart. And even towards the end, towards when the diagnosis comes out and everything, she's so methodical and she's very thoughtful in her words. I would trust her, I feel, from her family. Yes.
Me too. Me too.
Her son, I feel like he's still a little too young and maybe he'll be a little reckless with his money. But I feel like I would trust her.
I just feel like that is her only son.
Yeah.
If she wants to give him all her fucking money, he's gonna get it anyway.
Yeah, he is.
Like, why not give it to him while he can enjoy it? Like, unless he's stealing it from her.
Yeah.
But I didn't get that impression.
Yeah, that was the thing. It doesn't seem like that was the case. It was just that, yeah, he was spending a lot of money. But again, you see it within the documentary where she's just giving him things. Like, she just wants to give him stuff because that's how she shows her
love. It's her love language. Yeah. I wish I had a rich relative whose love language was gift giving.
I know. Like, just come over and give me.
So we see a couple incidences in these first few episodes, and one of them is when she's trying to buy the vape.
Oh, my God.
So she has this publicist, and the publicist's name is Sean, and she's a young girl. I mean, this girl's probably 25, right? 26, 27, maybe?
She's really young. Sean, I think, Sonati, because she's like, Sonati.
Yes. And she's rotten to her. Mm-hmm. Wendy is rotten to Sean. She tells her she needs to lose weight. She makes comments about her body all the time, and it's triggering to me anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sean just takes it in stride. She's like, whatever. And she wants to go buy a vape. And she's like, this is the store we go to. You drive past the Wendy Williams show and you go to this store. They take her to that exact store. She claims it's not right. She makes them drive around the block again, go past the Wendy Williams show, go to the store. They do it again. They do it again. They do it again. They do it. It's bad. It's hard. It's really hard to watch.
It was to the point where like the cameras had to stop. Like production was like, okay, you know, we're done for the day.
Yeah. They did this for hours. And
just going back around. She would berate her. Just like, you're an idiot. Do you not know this? This is not it. And they're like, the driver's like, this is the same. Look, we just passed here. No, this is the one. Like on the fifth turn. And I'm like, oh my God.
We see her constantly talking about alcohol, constantly. Alcohol, liquor, alcohol. Will claims to be respecting Kevin's wishes on camera. So on camera, Will's saying, look, Kevin doesn't want her to have a drop of alcohol. You know, we see him kind of trying to uphold that.
Yeah, but again, going to like the restaurant, being like, just bring her apple juice or whatever.
But again, somebody's buying her alcohol.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we get to episode 3, and we see her niece come. So the niece's name is, I have it somewhere, Alex? Is it Alex? Yes.
Yes, Finney.
So, so Alex Finney is Wanda's daughter, and she comes, and this scene is so beautiful. So through most of the documentary, if you guys haven't watched it, and I recommend watching it, I think it was riveting. I was riveted by it. Through most of the docuseries, the first two episodes anyway, all Wendy's doing, she's irate with everybody, and she berates people, and she's screaming at people, and she's nasty. Like, she's just very direct. Mm-hmm. She's abrasive. Would you say she's abrasive?
Absolutely. I mean, her nail tech comes in and she's just trying to do a primer on her. She's like, no, you're an idiot. Take that off. It's like, yeah, what is happening?
She is a hard, like, for me, having this be my first exposure to her, she struck me as a hard woman to love, right?
Yeah.
We see a very different side to her when she's with Alex. Mm-hmm. And it's the first moment where you really see a tenderness come out of her. And Alex comes in, she's sitting on the couch, they're talking. Then Sean comes in and Alex freaks out. And she's like, I'm not sitting here with this woman. And they have it all, like, she's still mic'd up, but she's off screen telling production, I don't know who this girl is. I don't know what her intentions are. I will not sit here with her. Like, get her out of here. And then Alex starts to cry and tells the camera, like, there are people around my aunt that I don't trust and that we don't know. And something's going on here.
Yeah. That's why I feel like I could trust her, because she is aware of this. And when she first had that adverse reaction to the publicist, I was like, why is she acting like this? But then later on, when you see what the publicist does, you're like, oh, she was right. She sussed it out from the beginning that she is no good.
So my question is, the help me, not the executor. What's
the guardian?
Thank you. The guardian. The guardian seems to be under the impression, or have at least floated the theory to the public, that it's somebody in the family misusing funds, right?
Right.
Or is it somebody else?
That's the thing. I don't really know, because
is it one of these people?
Now there's like a new lawsuit or something going on, because the Guardian is suing A&E for the documentary.
They wanted the documentary stopped.
Yeah. And also, apparently, the guardianship has not been paying some of her taxes, because her apartment, she bought, according to TMZ, she bought this apartment, the one we see in the documentary, in 2021 for $4.5 million. And she has unpaid taxes from 2019 to 2021. So
it's like $500,000, right? The unpaid taxes?
Exactly. And so her guardians are in charge of that. Like, they took over around that time. So why wasn't that paid?
Right.
So it's also that it's a little weird.
Well, and then the narrative also, like, when, and again, the source for this part is Wendy, and we don't know how accurate this is, but she's like, they're telling me I have no money. Is it possible that she doesn't have the money? We don't know.
We don't know, but that could be possible, because if you're telling me that her son's, you know, monthly Uber Eats receipt is $100,000, then
right.
A lot of money is going towards that child, and he's spending a lot of it. And that apartment is expensive as hell.
And she's Wendy Williams. She doesn't have Oprah money.
No.
She doesn't have Howard Stern money.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, she's not paid billions.
No.
She's probably paid millions, but she's not paid billions. There's a difference. So now we see, hold on. Let me back up. Now we see that she leaves to LA without telling anyone. This is a big moment in the documentary. Yes. She leaves and Will freaks the fuck out. Will seems to have been hired maybe by, or at least is in touch with, the Guardian.
Yeah, I think that Will works closely with the Guardian, because I think at one point he did say, like, you're putting me in a bad position with the guardianship. So I think he kind of, like, is the man on the ground, like, boots on the ground to the Guardian thing.
Now, the publicist, Sean, seems to have come from a lawyer. Because remember, she said, I was appointed by a lawyer to handle the fallout after Wendy got out of rehab or whatever.
Right.
So, and that sort of the press and the public shenanigans that Wendy had been up to when she got out of that are laced throughout the documentary. So we see, like, the footage of her falling asleep in a store. We see the footage of her being drunk on the street. You know what I mean? Like, stuff like that. Like, there was a lot of bad PR years there.
Yeah, there were.
Yeah.
And you notice how she was able to twist everything in her answers, which is like, we're looking at you, but like, we know that you're lying to us. And then even the producer at one point is like, that's a spin. He's like, no, well, that's what's really happening. It's like, it's not. Like, are you as delusional as she is?
Yes. So now we find out that she went to LA and she went with Sean. Mm-hmm. And this is interesting because Sean claims that Wendy called her terrified and said that she needed to get out of here and that she didn't like Will and she was scared of Will. And Will is screaming, she should be scared. It was interesting to me because, again, this is as explicit as I can think of a case of a non-reliable narrator, right? Because she literally has been diagnosed with dementia. So we don't know what is real and what isn't. So is she scared of Will? Because then there's moments where she's like, I love you, Will, and I trust you. And she's warm with him. And we don't know if Sean's telling the truth. Like, it's just unreliable narrators all around.
It's very dicey situation. And I feel for her son, for Kevin Jr.
Oh my God, me too.
Having to like see all that play out in the press and from afar and not have a say.
Yeah, because Kevin's whole thing, guys, is he's fighting this guardianship because he wants to be her guardian.
And he wants her to live in Miami with him, yeah.
And it's interesting because we learned that right before the guardianship happened, he had her power of attorney.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's what triggered this. Like, I wonder if he was maybe – look, Wendy Williams does not seem like she's a minimalist. When they were in Miami and he was taking care of her, and we do have video of it, and she seems way better.
I remember seeing that play out in the press. I remember on social media seeing the video, like her first video resurfaced. She's walking on the beach. She's with her son. I was like, oh my gosh, she's looking good. She put on some weight. She looked healthy.
He had her on a vegan diet. She wasn't drinking. She was exercising, getting to all her doctor's appointments.
She was coherent.
This kid was taking really good care of his mother. Mm-hmm. And he had power of attorney throughout the time, which is common when you are taking care of a parent because you have to sign off on medical stuff. You have to do this. You have to do that.
Yeah.
I wonder if him just taking a lot of money out of her bank account for whatever, for their living, for her, triggered this. That's what I'm wondering. And if because it makes him look suspicious to the bank.
Because he also said, like, I never take anything. She would tell me to do these things. I was following her orders. And I could see in a world where she'd be like, take out $1,000. Buy yourself something cute. You're mad at me. Like, I could see that scenario.
100%. 100%. Wendy Williams is somebody who likes to take care of her family.
Yeah.
We learn later that, you know, when she was 26 and she was working in, was it Florida?
Yeah,
I think it was Florida. She bought her parents a condo because they didn't want to stay cold in the winter. Like and she didn't have a lot of money at 26. Like, I think she was like on a local radio station.
Yeah.
So like Wendy Williams is a giver and she's somebody who likes to take care of her family. So I could imagine her down there in the bosom of her family, right? Mm-hmm. Just being like, oh, that's on me. That's on me. You pay for this. Yeah. You get this. Absolutely. 100%. But Wells Fargo is the one who triggered this.
Yeah.
Wells Fargo, which I have my money with. And now I'm like,
oh, no.
I need to take them out. You're not keeping my $600, Wells Fargo. How dare you?
How dare you? That's mine.
Okay. So while she's in LA, she keeps talking about this meeting that she's having with NBC.
Oh my God. That was so cringe.
And she supposedly talked, like, the whole theme again of this is that she's making a comeback and she's having a podcast. And there's even a part where she's like, she's talking to Kevin and she's like, we're doing the podcast now. It's happening now. And I think they show us that to kind of show her confusion. But I'm like, this is common confusion among older people. My mother wouldn't know what a podcast was. If I, like, she knows what it is because she listens to mine. But if I followed her around with the camera and was like, we're doing a podcast, she'd be like, okay. Like, no. Like, documentary podcast. Like, I feel like that confusion is normal. Anyway, so she's out in California, and the family is not happy she's in LA. Nobody is.
Nobody.
She's interviewed, and she says Will is mean to her and screams at her, and she wants a new manager. Okay?
Yeah.
Sean takes Wendy. This is one of the pivotal scenes of the whole documentary. She takes her to lunch. First, she takes her to the Hollywood Walk of Fame to see her star.
Oh, my God. I felt so many things on that moment. Oh, my God.
Tell me what you felt.
Watching her stand there on her star. And just, she looked a little out of it. I don't know if she was taking it all in, if she was trying to process it, or she was overcome by her success at the moment or being seen. Because she stood there and she was looking like afar, like she was not really there. And then fans come by and then she like sparks back to life. All of a sudden she has a personality and she's like on. And it was so fascinating to see, and to see the love those kids had for her.
Agreed.
It really touched her and she felt it. It was so beautiful and sad to see, because they're really going like, when are you coming back with your show? We miss you. We need you. And she's like, I'm in talks with so-and-so. I'm doing this. And everybody's like, yeah, she's coming back. Everybody's thinking everything is fine because that's what she's saying. But we've seen hours of that not being the case.
I found those moments like so touching. I agree with you. Like just seeing her connect with her fans, I was like, wow, this woman really means a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah, I know I have a friend who used to go to her show tapings all the time. Like he made it like a thing. He went to hundreds of tapings. Like, so he's a true fan of Wendy. Yeah. He just loves her.
So she asks, okay, so now they're leaving the Hollywood Walk of Fame and they go to lunch. And Sean just lets her drink. Now she's going to a meeting with NBC. Mm-hmm. Sean's letting her drink, and they ask her, they interview her in front of Wendy. So and let me just finish, then I'll tell you where I'm thinking. So she's like, oh, I'm not worried about her drinking. She knows how to stop. Wendy knows her limits, Sean says. Now I'm of two minds of this. I wonder if Sean is just so young. There's no way she knows how to stand up to this woman.
Yeah.
And I wonder if her answer would have been different if they didn't interview her in front of Wendy.
Yeah. To me, she is putting her first in the moment. She's like, this is my client. I'm in front of her. We're doing everything she says. And she's right. That's basically the attitude she had. Because she did give her like a little glance when she was drinking. She was kind of like, and then she kind of looked away, tried to pretend like she wasn't concerned. Did you notice that?
Yes.
There was a point she gave a little side eye and then she pretended like she wasn't concerned.
Yes. And I'm just wondering, like, if we got her off the camera, you know, off to the side, if she would have been like, I'm not fucking standing up to her. Are you kidding me? You've seen her abuse people. Like, I'm not doing this. They don't pay me enough. Like, I just wonder if that, because you know yourself. How old are you? Are you 40?
Not yet. 39.
Yay. Okay. So you know yourself, like, at 25 years old, could you have ever stood up to somebody who had such a power over you, you know, in your career, socially, whatever? I couldn't. I could barely do it now.
I could barely do it now. And I'm in a situation where I can't legally get into, but in a situation with like a former employer where it took years for me to stand up to them.
Right. So, exactly. And you would not have done that at 25. And that's
why I wouldn't have done that 2 years ago, let alone at 25, you know?
Right. I mean, it takes women especially a really long time to find our voice and our power. And I can't imagine this girl has it.
And also, anyway, she's a young Black girl. Wendy Williams is a very strong, famous Black woman. She probably has a lot of respect for her. And she probably sees her more as like an auntie figure. So she can't talk back to an auntie. Like, you don't do that.
No, absolutely not. Hey, everyone. Stay tuned. Little Miss Recap will be right back after these words.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction. And free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak,
and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
So she asks Wendy if she wants to go to the Oscars, and Wendy doesn't know what the Oscars are. And there's little moments like this throughout the whole documentary. After, so they go in the meeting with NBC. We don't see it. But after the meeting, Wendy says it went very well. And she seems lucid in this moment. She's like, it went well. But then she goes, I showed them my feet. The feet thing is real. Yeah. She's hung up on this. Mm-hmm. And we learn that NBC has never called for the talk show.
Yeah.
So Wendy gets back to New York and we see Will waiting for her. And he just, that's another thing. New York represents some kind of safety for her.
Yeah.
Because immediately after this meeting, she's like, I need to get back to New York. I need to get back now.
Yeah. Whenever she's mm-hmm. done with a situation, I need to go back to New York. Like, that's mm-hmm. where she needs control.
Mm-hmm. So she goes to New York. Will, like, flips out on both of them, Sean and her, whatever. Then we see in the last episode, it's kind of themed around Wendy reconnecting with her family.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice episode. So we see her going down to, and just, you know, fill in anything I missed because I didn't do a lot of notes on episode 4. Mm-hmm. But she goes down to Miami. She's with Will and they're sitting in a restaurant and they're waiting to meet Kevin. And what's the nephew's name?
I thought it was Kevin as well. I think they have like a similar name.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Oh, God. But yeah, that was
she's
like.
She's meeting with her son and another family member.
Yeah, and Alex's brother, basically. Yes, Finney. Yes.
Yeah, her nephew. Yeah. Finney.
Yeah, her nephew.
So they sit down. They come in. They're late. They sit down. Kevin, in his eyes, you can see that this is, he hasn't seen her in a while.
Yeah.
And he is devastated in this moment. Like, he does not know how to react. And she's just not with it. You know, she's not lucid. She's not making much sense. And he's devastated. And then we see her meeting with her dad. What did you think about that?
Oh, the dad. Oh, he's so sweet. And it's so sad that he's more lucid than she is at his age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But at least at this point, he's been told. So what we learned from the documentary is that at least what they're saying, the filmmakers, what they had no idea that this was an issue, that she had any sort of mental issues. They just knew that she was trying to start a comeback and that she had an alcohol addiction and that mm-hmm. they were trying to document that. Mm-hmm. And along the way, they discovered she has a whole bunch of health issues that are contributing to this, mm-hmm. to the fact that it's affecting her mental health and that she's not really there. So we do find out, you know, the diagnosis, which is like insane.
But they don't say it till episode 4.
Till episode 4.
I think it's the nephew that says it. And mm-hmm. then we get the black screen of death. And it says the producers had never heard of this diagnosis until now.
Yep.
And I think that was them covering their ass. Like, we didn't know this was a thing. Because the family kind of kept it hush-hush mm-hmm. a little bit, which was interesting. So she's in Florida. Like I said, she's sitting with her dad.
Amy, hold on. Let me go back to that. So if the I'm thinking that they probably found out later on, because had they known, I think they should have stopped the documentary. Like, no, she has this condition. Like, don't follow her around. So that's why I'm like, when did they find out?
Yeah, when did they find out? It's unclear. It's unclear. But you're right. I mean, Kevin's one of the producers. Listed as a producer on the documentary. He could have stopped it. Absolutely.
He could have. Yeah.
So she's visiting her dad and there's this moment with them on the couch and they start talking about her mother and she was very close to her mother.
Yeah.
And she's like, I really miss her. And the dad's like, I miss her too. I talk to her every day, but she's not talking back. Ha ha ha. Yeah. Her dad's adorable. She, again, 6 years old, Asbury Park. She's talking about it. She remembers buying them that condo, like I said, in Florida when they were cold in the winters, which, you know, I get that. And It was very sweet. So then we finally get an interview with Wanda, who we had not seen through the entire documentary.
Yeah, she didn't want to participate at first.
Oh, wait, let me, before Wendy goes away, because Wendy exits stage left through through this. But before she does, we do get the scene in New York with her and Blac Chyna that you talked about.
Yeah.
And it's so endearing. And so did you remember their beef?
Yes, because, okay, so this was back in the I feel like the Kardashian age is still ongoing, goddammit.
Oh, God, we're never going to get out of it.
But it was that time when Rob Kardashian, the only male, he had gotten Blac Chyna pregnant. They were together, and there were, like, all kinds of issues in terms of fidelity. There was always, like, rumors that she was stepping out on him, or that it was just a toxic situation. And she used to be a stripper. Blac Chyna started out as a stripper. So I think that Wendy would call her, like, she's just a stripper. Like, you can't turn her hoe into a housewife kind of situation. Oh, that was, like, her stance on her.
Yeah, so one of the headlines, I think, was, like, she came from the pole. Something like that. Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So that she was slut shaming her a lot. And then when she had her on her show and she sat down with her and looked her in the eye, she changed her stance and was like, I'm going to call you Angela because that's your name. Like, yes. I see the real person. I don't see this. And
persona.
That's why people liked her, because she would walk shit back. If she was wrong, she would admit it.
Yep. So Blac Chyna comes to see her, and like you said, they're talking a few minutes, and then you could see Angela, Blac Chyna, start to, okay, this is not a good situation. But she, like, hugs her and, like, lies against her chest.
Yeah,
like,
she was crying.
Like a little girl. It's so sweet. I mean, the connection that Wendy has with her is really beautiful.
And I'm pretty sure it's because I don't know how much you know about Blac Chyna, but she had a documentary a few years ago with her mother. It was so, I never watched the full documentary. I just saw clips on it online. So toxic, their relationship. Yeah. Like, the mother straight up would punch her in the face on camera and curse her out and call her a whore.
Oh my God.
Like, this is on camera on their TV show. Like, this is
so what's happening off camera, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of thing that she was accustomed to. So Wendy being kind of like a mother figure makes sense. So I think in that moment when she realized, oh no, she's not really there, it was just so heartbreaking.
Yeah. It was moving. There is this, like, thread of motherhood throughout this. Like, we see, you know, I believe what really shook Wendy's world was losing her mother. And we don't spend enough time talking about that. But I think that really pulled the rug out from under her. I mean, it's such a pivotal moment in a daughter's life when they lose their mother. Like, if they're close to their mother, not everybody is, but everybody has a mother figure, even, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, losing that mother figure in your life is so devastating. And then seeing how she's a surrogate mother for others, but she also struggles with her relationship with Kevin. Like, she really wants to be a good mother. And she just keeps, I feel like, trying to buy him. You know,
that's
kind of
the impression I got. Because even when she meets up with them at that lunch, she's like giving him a shirt. Like, here's some clothes. These are fancy. Like,
That's later when they go to the dinner. So they go to a dinner with her brother, who we had never met. So Wendy and the brother, the dad, I didn't see Wanda there.
The nephew. Yeah.
The nephew and Kevin. So they're all sitting there and Wendy orders a fucking drink. And the brother's like, no, under his breath, constant, like, just trying to get her to
don't start it. Yeah, he was like, you don't want to start. Like, he was trying not to make a big deal on camera. You could tell he was like, no, come on, let's not do that. Yeah.
And at one point they go somewhere, I think it's when they went to the hotel in Florida, Will's calling room service and is like, if there is one drop of alcohol delivered to this room, I'm going to come down there and light your kitchen on fire. Like, he is like, no. But again, is he only doing that on camera? We don't know. Yeah. At one point, though, Will is exasperated and he's like, I think somebody has to be here 24/7 with her. Yeah. So that told me maybe he's not buying. I don't know. But somebody's getting this woman alcohol because she cannot go to a store and get it herself. Literally.
She doesn't. You could tell by this documentary that she does not leave her house unescorted. Mm-mm. Like, somebody's that getting stop. Where she went to get the e-cigarette or whatever, vape.
Yeah.
That is literally three blocks away from her house.
Yeah.
Because I've been to that. There's a little, like, subway or something right next to it. Like, it's right there.
Yeah.
It's literally, three blocks away, and she cannot go on her own without a car.
No, she can't get there. we see another common thread that we didn't hit on is, or not a common thread, but a minor subplot, is that she's trying to sell her stuff because she doesn't have money, right? So she's trying to sell her clothes. She's trying to sell her decor. She needs to move into a place that's on the first floor. That's all one level. So she's doing that kind of stuff, and she keeps fucking that up, right? Like, the people come to help her, and she's so drunk she's throwing up, and then she's passing out. Like, it's hard to watch. It's really hard to watch.
And then I ask myself this, and I'll ask you, if you were watching this, and we didn't know her diagnosis at all.
Which I didn't when I was watching it. I didn't know.
We didn't until the documentary came out, like towards the end, that they kind of revealed it. But would you be like, this is exploitive because this person is clearly an addict and they're out of it?
That's my impression.
That was my impression.
That was my thought. I feel very similarly. I know it's become like a cultural joke, but about like the David Hasselhoff cheeseburger video.
I remember recording that.
And making fun of people who are struggling with addiction or at their worst is the worst kind of exploitation, in my opinion. It's gross.
Yeah, it's really gross. So I was like, in that perspective, it's not just her being like a diva, because it's different if she was just like, I just want to be famous, and she's doing like stupid shit to be famous. Yeah. And there's no like real repercussions, and she's just like a tabloid, like fame whore kind of thing. I'd be fine with that. I'd be like, yeah, be outrageous, spend money, do whatever you want. It's yours. But when there's a mental health issue, when there's addiction, it makes me feel weird, because it's like, this person, does no one else see what I'm seeing? And can you not see that? And there was a point, another thing that speaks to her mental illness is also, she was standing in front of the mirror. She was the skinniest she's ever been. She's like, I finally have a thigh gap. And she started crying. And I was like, I've been there. That is a low point.
Yeah.
Because she was looking fragile. And she's like, I have a thigh gap. And she's sobbing of joy. That is when you're in a bad mental headspace. As someone who has dealt with anorexia, I know that headspace, it's not a good place to be. So even just with that, I would be like, she's not good to do this.
She needs intense inpatient therapy. Yes. And ironically, I think that's what she's getting now.
Yeah.
So at the end of the documentary, they whisk her away, and she is put somewhere by the Guardian.
And we don't hear from her again. No more updates from her.
Will had to call the Guardian and be like, she has to get put away. Like, it's too much.
And they did not disclose to the family where she was.
Nope. So they did not tell the family where she is. Apparently, according to Wanda, the family can't call her. So she is away at an undisclosed location. But now we hear phone calls from her to Wanda. And she sounds lucid. And she sounds good.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how we end it. Like, now, so the end is that the family are fighting to get guardianship. They want the guardianship. Wanda said, Wells Fargo approached me. They told me they needed a guardian for her. I said I would do it. You have to take a couple classes. I said I would do it. Then all of a sudden this wall went up.
Yeah.
And it was no contact or whatever. It's just so scary to me that these guardianships can take place where your family doesn't even have a say.
Yeah, because there are some instances with some families, obviously. We saw that with the Britney situation, where her own family was, like, milking her dry, which is another thing that we saw in the documentary for a quick bit, when she was talking about Britney's dad and how awful he was, that her family deserves death. So then people were like, this is her karma. This is why she's like this. And I'm just like, okay, first of all, she went too far with that. But again, she was not in a good mental health situation either when she said these things. And she was probably feeling for Britney, because she has no control over her own life. So she's like, fuck those people. So of course she's going to have that reaction.
Well, and Wendy Williams, I'm not excusing what she's, you shouldn't wish
that. Oh, no, anybody. You should never say that. Yeah.
But she is a self-made woman, right? So she probably feels this exceptionally hard. Yeah. Like, a person who is self-made and creates their own success should not be cut off from that.
Yeah.
And I think that that is what probably she connected with Britney Spears on. Like, Britney Spears did all that hard work herself. Were her parents entitled to some of it? Of course. They're probably the ones who drove her to practices and did this and did that.
And,
you know,
trust her mom, as a parent, like, quit her job or whatever. Yeah, to be with them.
So then you take a reasonable salary. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or you let your kid buy you a house. Buy me a house. Then we're even. That's fine. Note to Amy's children, if you want to buy me a house, I'll take it.
And then if you want to buy Leslie a house, I can take it too. If you just want to buy houses, are you guys millionaires at this point?
All right. So I wanted to tell you about, I watched Alex. She was on The View 2 weeks ago. And you have some notes in of after stuff as well, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So she comes on The View, and this was, again, 2 weeks ago. She says, Wendy wanted to do this to tell her story. She said, we all saw it play out publicly in the blogs. Now, I can't remember what documentary I was covering, but somebody else was just going off about blogs. I'm like, blogs aren't a thing anymore, guys. Stop talking about blogs.
It is such a big thing on Housewives, like for the blogs Bravo celebrities. They still talk. No, like literally reunions and feuds, season-long feuds are held over blogs, over headlines on a blog. RealityTV.com posted that I did this, and it's a whole feud.
Anyway, whole blogs thing. Aren't a thing. So she says the family knows there's something. So this is, again, Alex. The family knows there's something going on beyond addiction and that this is 100% medical as well. She says there were people around her that were suspicious and we worried that she might not be aware of what she was signing or what she was doing. Mm-hmm. She says they finally made contact with The Guardian after filming, but The Guardian has been keeping Wendy under wraps. The family can't reach her. Even when the grandfather was either sick or dying, they could not reach Wendy to tell her that her father was sick or dying. She said the family was starting to have conversations about her money and her mental state. And then, like I said, all of a sudden the wall came down. She does say Wendy's still in the facility. She's been there since last April. The family doesn't know where it is. She can call them, but they can't call her. Alex says Wendy does sound better and she seems to be doing a lot better. So that was kind of where she was at. And then on The View, Sunny, I think, is the lawyer. Mm-hmm. She was talking about like how this has become a popular practice with guardianships being appointed independent of families and how problematic that is.
Yeah.
To get control back of your life. And then I just also have a note that Wendy has been diagnosed with primary progressive aphasia and frontotemporal dementia, which can be alcohol induced.
Yeah. And that's a similar diagnosis to Bruce Willis recently, the frontal dementia thing.
Yeah.
So from my notes is just a quick update in terms of what has gone on since the documentary. So Sean, the publicist, has been fired, no longer works. Neither does Will Shelby. He's no longer her manager.
Oh, so okay.
I don't know if this was the guardianship that decided to get rid of them, but the media company of the documentary, A&E, has been sued for releasing documentaries. So the lawsuit claims that Wendy didn't have all the mental capacity to authorize the documentary. So that's their argument. And the filmmakers still stand by the claim that they did not have any knowledge of Wendy's health condition when they started filming. And that they were just told that she had an issue with alcohol. So essentially, they were just capturing her comeback thinking she was just going to be battling alcohol and that's it.
Yes. Okay. All right. So here's my question for you. Do you think this should have been released?
I mean, I'm glad it was for my own sake because I'm curious. She's a public figure. I'm curious as to what happens with them. But it's so exploitive. I feel so bad because I know that her family is saying, well, she wanted to tell her side of the story. But Wendy, with full mental capacity, I don't think she would want to see herself without a wig on camera. Like, that's not her.
Yeah. Yeah.
She would have never done that.
Who was she with? Black Gina when she did that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which speaks to their relationship that she felt safe in that moment to be able to do it. See,
but there was a point she was laying in bed and she was just like almost comatose. And then the camera was on her. She's like, are you filming me? They're like, yeah. And then she's like smiling. And I'm like, what is happening?
So for somebody like me who didn't really know much about Wendy Williams, and what I did know, what I did see was scandalous and, you know, on TMZ and in the blogs, Leslie. I think this humanized her. And it really shined a light on addiction. It shined a light on fame. Mm-hmm. It shined a light on I think, you know, the specific struggles to being a Black woman in this country, yeah. I think it was, I don't know, like I walked away from this having a lot more respect for Wendy Williams than I did going into it. But I watch everything through an empathetic lens. You know what yeah. I mean? So like, I don't know if somebody would have seen this and been like, oh my God, she's a train wreck. I saw it as a sad story. And I'm sure
it
was
a sad story. Mm-hmm. It made sense. Then everything started to kind of make sense when they were saying like, I did see that. That was like infamous when she was dressed, that Halloween episode, dressed as a Statue of Liberty, she just faints on air. I remember seeing that. Yeah. Being like, what is happening?
Yeah.
So those were like minor signs that there were things going on. Even while she was before COVID, she would lose her train of thought mid-conversation mm-hmm. on the air. And people
I remember like TikToks going around. Yeah. Look at the bizarre shit Wendy Williams did on her show today. Like, I remember that.
Yeah.
They were in the zeitgeist, even if I wasn't paying attention to them. There was this narrative that Wendy Williams was losing.
Unhinged, yeah.
Yes. And I feel like this, again, I come away from this saying Wendy Williams is a person worth saving and needs to be saved. And I don't know if I would have felt that way before.
Right. Because we didn't know. I guess it did humanize her. You see her with her family. Not only that, you see how the community rallies around her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even in her darkest moments, they're like, we still love you. You could do this. We'll see you soon. You know, everybody's so hopeful for her.
Mm-hmm. And I just think that she's such a I don't want to say role model. Well, I guess like a role model for some of these girls.
Yeah.
Young women. And it's like this. I don't know. I don't know. I just feel like I've never really seen a documentary like this before.
Right.
I feel like I do believe that she consented to it. I do believe that she had a good rapport with the directors. And like, I didn't feel gross about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought I would, 100%. I thought I would. But I do feel like even her niece was like, Wendy wanted to do this to tell her story.
And I could, succeeded. I could see that. Yeah.
She succeeded. We now know her story.
Yeah.
Rather than TMZ's version of it.
Exactly. But I could totally see that. Because there, I mean, one of the episodes is titled like, I just want to be famous. Like, that's all mm-hmm. she cares about. If she wants to go to a place, she's like, are there celebrities there? If not, I don't want to go there. Like, she just wants to be where the fame is, with the adoring public.
Right. But what we see in those, but I think what's underlying that, right? Because when she does go out and she's doing that, we see those connections with the fans. Yeah. Like, and oh, this is why she does it. That's the dopamine hit, is the connections with these women or these, you know, fans of hers.
Yeah.
Like, it's all about connectivity and I don't know. I like I said, I have more respect for her now, I think, which is wild. Yeah. So anyway, I think we've said it all.
I think so too. We covered everything. Those were four lengthy episodes.
It was riveting though. Like, it really pulled me in. I watched it no problem, like zipped right through them.
Yeah,
normally
me too.
I have a hard time concentrating. Do you have to have like a game or something going on your phone while you're watching TV?
Yeah, I usually have them like in my iPad. I have like the coloring book app.
Yes.
I just can't focus on one thing. I'm like, I need distraction.
I can't either, but I did not need that with this.
No, with like, this,
I was
just
riveted.
I kept pausing and pulling out my notebook like, oh my God, did she just say this? Because I was like, what is happening?
I know. Well, I thank you very much for your service.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'm just an old lady who knows not much about pop culture.
And I just know a lot of it because I don't know why I like this kind of stuff.
I always go to you for everything. Like, can you explain this? Can you explain this? Can you explain this?
For some reason, I retain this kind of stuff in my mind. Nothing that's useful, by the way. Only junk. That's all I retain in here. Like, I have full knowledge, like full memory recall of The Clueless. Like, screenplay. Like, I could dictate the entire movie. I could dictate all of Dirty Dancing, Look Who's Talking. Like, why is that in my head? I do not know.
That's important shit. Let me tell you, the funniest thing ever was when I meant to tag you in Little Miss Recap's Backdoor Friends Facebook group and say, can you break down what's going on with Andy Cohen and this Coke rumor? But I accidentally did it on my main Facebook page. And then I just left it there. I'm like, you know what? Now you guys are going to see the trash that I am. that I'm talking about so Andy funny. Going.
Oh, I love that. I was just like, oh, girl, let me tell you. It was so funny because there's so many other podcasters and people that be like, I've hung out with Andy. He's never offered me Coke. Now I feel insulted.
Do you think that he will stay the face of this? Will he weather this storm?
I think so. I think Bravo fans are really loyal to the show and just to the overall messiness. Like, people weren't that outraged. They're like, oh, he offered you Coke. Oh, Andy Cohen. You know, like, no one was, like, surprised. They were like, yeah, everything seems a little crazy and wacky.
Have you watched New Year's Eve with Anderson Cooper? He's clearly on something.
Allegedly, no offense, but he's clearly drunk on those shows. No, I mean, even on Watch What Happens Live, his talk show, his nightly talk show thing, they do shots. Like, within, they have drinking games throughout the show. They do shots. And if you're sober, celebrity that shows up, then they'd be like, and you're going to take a shot of water. Like, they make sure to say that. And then, you know, they all do shots. So it's like a whole very party culture. So that does not surprise me.
Okay. All right. Well, guys, you heard it here first. If you have any Housewives questions, direct them to Leslie DJ. She's in our group. She's one of our favorites, and she's happy to answer. And why don't you tell everyone where they can find you?
Well, you can find my podcast, Sinister Girls, on all the streaming platforms.
I have to do it. Sinister Girls.
I love that song. Tatiana Calco wrote that. That was awesome. We will have new episodes in April. Right now, I'm just finishing up this recruitment of my dissertation. But you can follow me at Sinister Girls. I've actually, until TikTok gets banned nationally, I've been posting a lot of TikToks on the Housewives, just Housewives out of context. Because sometimes they say random shit and then I just, you know, like mash it up with like a movie clip or with like a song or something. So there's this one scene from this season of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills with Dorit. She's kind of problematic on this show just because of the microaggressions, but we'll deal with that later. But Kyle Richards had a white party, which everybody dressed in white at SoFi Stadium. Okay. And Denise Richards shows up with like something with hot pink, like pink and white. And she was like, does she not know it's a white party? And the way she said it, I was like, oh, I could do so much damage with that. Okay. So I took that and I mashed it up with a clip from White Chicks and kind of made it like a little thing. So
I thought maybe you would mash it up with Prince Harry wearing his Nazi uniform.
Oh, no, that's a little too much.
At that party.
I know, right? White party. I know, right? I don't think I have footage of that, but I just used, like, white
chicken. It's not a white nationalist party? Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So I just used a clip of white chicks and kind of mashed it up. Right. And it's getting a lot of hits. And then there's
What's your handle there? Is it Sinister Girls?
It's also at Sinister Girls. Okay. So I've just been doing those. And I did another one on the reunion with Kyle Richards and her rumored girlfriend. No one cares if you're gay, Kyle. Come out. Don't come out. No one cares. Okay. Stop digging us around.
Wasn't she on Little House on the Prairie? Yes.
Yeah, she was. Yes. She's an actor, child star. She was in, the Halloween movies. She was like the little kid in the first one, and then she came back as an adult.
I remember that, yes. All right, my friend, thank you so much for doing this. Guys, if you haven't already, follow Leslie, follow us at Little Miss Recap on Instagram, jump in Backdoor Friends, our Facebook group, and if you like what you hear, join us over on Patreon, Supercast, or Apple subscriptions, where we talk cults, soap operas, and murder. I mean, awesome. I don't know what else you can think there.
Okay. That's everything.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.